For since we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so, through Jesus, God will bring with him those who have died. For this we declare to you by word of the Lord, that we who are alive, who are left until the coming of the Lord, will by no means precede those who have died. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. Please be seated. I understand that if I didn't say that part, you'd be stuck standing for the whole. It seems like that would be an inauspicious way to begin. Good morning. I'm humbled to be with you. Thank you for your attention. I was going to talk about the wisdom readings for today. That had been my plan when Mark and I chose the Sunday when I could come, but then I woke up on this last Monday morning and had this overwhelming urge to write something about the most recent church shooting in Sutherland Springs, Texas, where 26 people were gunned down during the process of worship. And I had actually pretty much missed the whole thing when it happened. I was driving from Basking Ridge, New Jersey, down and back last Sunday to take my 15-year-old to a karate tournament, and we were listening to a book on tape. But during the day, you know how your cell phone, you get those news feeds, right? And all of a sudden, just started to come through all day. And when we got home and sort of emerged from this mother-daughter time, we came home to this overwhelming cacophony of coverage of this awful thing that had happened. So when something like that happens, sometimes I feel an overwhelming urge to write. I do a lot of public opinion work and that kind of thing, and it not only helps me process, but in moments of crisis, I feel called to try to be a teacher. And sometimes when I write, it's a way to not only process for myself, but hopefully teach in some way to help other people process as well. So I was sitting at my desk, the scarf has just fallen off, so excuse me for just a second. See if we can get that to stay. I was sitting at my desk on Monday morning, and I'm thinking, I really want to write something about this, but I don't have time, because today I have to prepare this talk for this community I'm going to on Sunday, and this is my only time this week. And then I realized, you idiot, of course you have time. Don't write about wisdom. Talk about this. So I went back to the readings for today, and I saw the Thessalonians reading, and it really just came together for me very well. So today, thank you for receiving my processing of the Texas shooting, which is a privilege to do in a worship community during an act of worship. And I do it as an act of solidarity, not hopefully as an act of selfish reflection. So I have this willfully simplistic interpretation of the Thessalonians reading. It's actually quite a complicated reading, but I see it as, what are we going to tell them we did when we meet again in heaven? What are we going to tell them we did when we meet again in heaven? I think part of what struck me so hard about Texas, besides the obvious horror of it, is that it made me realize, oh, this is a thing now. This is a thing. People go to worship, they go to celebrate and be in community, in faith together, and someone comes in and shoots them. And it's a thing now. And that was a very striking realization. There was an article in the Boston Globe on Monday called A List of Shootings at U.S. Houses of Worship Since 2012. And they had enough of a list to make an article, and it was not short. It was not a short article. So when I read Thessalonians, I had this simple interpretation. I know it's not sufficient, and I might even actually be missing the point. I don't think so, but I recognize that's a possibility, but all I could think of was this message of, we'll be together again. That at the end of the day, don't despair, we will be together again. And so if that's true, I had this picture of this ever-growing group of people waiting for us in heaven, at peace, full of worship and celebration and welcoming, if and when we are blessed enough to be with them. And I wondered, what will we tell them we did? 26 at the First Baptist Church in Sutherland Springs, 9 at Emmanuel AME in Charleston, 6 at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin in Oak Creek, and several more in ones and twos across the U.S. and across faith traditions. What are we going to tell them we did when we meet again? I realized I need to tell them I acted in love. That whatever else I did next when I meet them again, I need to be able to tell them that in my life, I acted in love. I think we don't really know what to do about what's happening with this new thing. I think we know. Some of us feel very strongly that this is about increased mental health care. Some of us feel very strongly that this is about gun control. Others of us actually feel very strongly that this is about arming ourselves to protect ourselves further. And any group of people actually has a well-formed theory with at least some anecdotal evidence to support it. But I don't think we actually know. Years of working on generational poverty in my life has helped me understand how difficult it really is to map our understanding of a complex systemic problem sufficiently to really understand it, to understand its drivers, what leads to what leads to what leads to what in sequence so that we can affect each of them in proper order to get massive systems level change. It's incredibly difficult to do. In this case, I think maybe Malcolm Gladwell, with his theory of thresholds of violence, which he actually pursued as a way to explain how school shootings have spread over time. I think maybe he's doing a good as job as any at starting to get that map right, but it's hard. And we are still operating in the realm of theory or of best hypothesis, and we're certainly at the point where such shootings are now a systemic level thing. So what do we do? We know these killings happened in churches. We know that what brought people together before they passed was their desire to be in worship, find community, and marry, as the Jesuits would say, faith and reason in their lives. And we know that that love, that some call to love of one another and some call to solidarity with one another, is a present in all of those cases and across faith traditions. So to act in response to a moment of horror when people were joined in community is to choose to act in community ourselves. It is to choose to stand in a place of love and to tell those who died in the act of faith what we did once where they were gone is to tell them, I acted in love in your absence. I acted in consistent tradition with the reason you were together in the first place and the reason that we come together in community every week. For me, that means pursuing solidarity. It's a very difficult time now to be called to love. In the age of this room, you may, as well as I, remember this movie from a while back called The Witches of Eastwick. It was quite a fun movie. No big things happening there, but a fun film. And at one point in the movie, these three women who have the power of witches but don't know really yet have this intense argument. They're really fighting with each other, yelling louder and louder. And they produce so much kinetic energy that the ground literally splits underneath them, sort of erupts, and they're like, oh my God! And that's when they start to figure out that maybe together they have this power. We are producing so much kinetic energy in our world right now. Anger, hate, group hate, political hate, interpersonal hate, neighborly hate. I actually think if one believed in that, we would have produced enough kinetic energy to fuel all the natural disasters, fires, earthquakes, hurricanes that we've seen. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not actually saying that's what happened. but we could have with the amount of kinetic energy that we are producing. We are the witches of Eastwick. But we are called to Christian love, and we are called to that Christian love because we believe in this concept of solidarity. All right, now social science has a definition of solidarity. It says it's social, very fancy, social cohesion based on interdependence created in more advanced societies. I like Gerald Byer's interpretation. He notes that solidarity is actually not a concept that appears like that specifically in the New Testament or the Hebrew Bible, but that it was actually a long, what he called Christian praxis. Before it was defined in Catholic social teaching, which is the tradition I come out of, as, to paraphrase John Paul II, solidarity helps us to see the other as an equal partner sent by God to share in the banquet of life and stewardship of God's creation. At its root, it is fundamental interdependence as the result of our common human dignity and our common spiritual creation. So to act in solidarity is an act of love that recognizes our common interdependence, our common call, and our common spiritual creation in the act of love. Solidarity is spiritually both salvific and necessary. At the community level, it preserves this complex interdependence that we rely on to function and survive together without cracking the earth underneath our feet. And interpersonally, it is the manifestation of the common love that formed us all, runs through us all, and connects us all. So what if we recommit to that Christian praxis of solidarity in the face of our divisions and the violence that we are facing today? What if our answer to the pain in the world around us is to commit to the love that comes from being profoundly connected to each other and created from the same spiritual cloth? What if we vote in solidarity? What if we spend in solidarity? What if we practice our philanthropy from a place of solidarity versus a place of fixing? What if we read in solidarity, listen in solidarity, discuss in solidarity? What would it mean if we could tell those in heaven who were worshiping in solidarity when they were gunned down that we each chose just one of those and recommitted ourselves wholly to that simple manifestation of love, to that one demonstration of the Christian praxis? I feel that if I do that, I could face that community when I had the blessing, I hope, of joining them in heaven and saying, this is what I did. This is what I did. It's so hard. I spend so much time angry these days. And some of that is because I'm raising teenagers. It's a very reasonable response to the life I'm in. But so much of it is the poison in the air, this kinetic energy. In the absence of love and my own failure to practice love, to recognize that I actually am love, and more importantly, that those who are making me frightened or angry are actually love too. That they are actually created of the same spiritual cloth as I am. They may be lost, I may be lost, but we are created from the same love. And I have to understand, both in my work and in my occupation of my life, that I have to carry that message always. For me, that is what I have to choose to do. That is what I have to be able to tell them I did when I see them again. So I never know how to end a talk, ever. I'm terrible at it. I never have these brilliant conclusions. It just sort of peters off at the end, and then finally I'm like, well, that's it. But fortunately, Thessalonians gave me the kicker line at the end this time. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. Therefore, encourage one another with these words. We are a world of words right now, and those words are weapons. Our weapons are weapons. Our anger are weapons. But we could encourage each other instead with words of love, with words of solidarity, with words of common spiritual connection that can overcome fear, frustration, confusion. I truly believe that if we pick one thing, if we can encourage each other with words of love and solidarity, we will be moving toward goodness, and we will be able to face that community when we are with them again and tell them proudly what we did. Thank you.